Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, June 7, 2018. University of Illinois, Illinois and Eichelberger could see upgrades. Training facilities, recruiting lounges at those fields are major focuses of planning. Facility upgrades at Illinois Field were a persistent topic of conversation this spring as Dan Hartlieb's Illinois Illini jumped back into the top 25 in March and the top quarter of the Big Ten by the end of the season. A complete teardown and a new baseball stadium isn't in Illinois' future plans, but upgrades could be coming to both Illinois and Eichelberger fields with the addition of training facilities for the baseball and softball teams. Cost remains the last stumbling block to two more additions to the Illini's steadily changing facilities landscape. Would I like to come in and build a brand new stadium for baseball? Obviously I would, Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman said. It's a question of resources. We understand that coming in and bulldozing that stadium and starting something over is going at this point to be a $30 to $40 million project. We think that the better approach is to focus on player development and, over time, as we have resources and opportunity, come in and make incremental improvements to the facility in both baseball and softball. Those future plans might include chairback seats, enhanced concessions, and what Whitman called a greater sense of entry, with a new entryway into what would be a growing baseball and softball complex. The immediate plans, though, revolve around recruiting lounges and training facilities for both programs. Current plans for the Illinois field expansion include a 1,750-square-foot recruiting lounge and a 23,970-square-foot training facility with an expected cost of $8 million. A 1,300-square-foot recruiting lounge and a 10,690-square-foot training facility with an estimated cost of $5 million to $6 million is planned for Eichelberger Field. We anticipate raising all of those dollars, Whitman said. We have some commitments already in the book, if you will, but we have a little ways to go until we can launch those, the facilities. The facilities will be big enough to house an infield space along with some hitting tunnels that will be able to drop down. Coming sooner will be an expansion of Irwin Indoor Practice Facility, which will fall under the cost of the current construction of the Football Performance Center. A rooftop terrace for the latter has also been added. It's something we contemplated from the beginning, but we were cautious in rolling it out until we knew we had enough money in the bank, Whitman said. Anytime you take on a project like this, you always build in what they call alternates. We had a series of alternates in this project that, based on bidding and based on the numbers, we knew may or may not be able to include in the package of the original project at the end of the day. As we've now gone through much of the bidding for the current building, we recognize we have the financial flexibility within the original budget number to be able to tackle a couple of those additional elements. While Irwin won't be extending to a full 100 yards, the roof structure forestalls that. The building will be expanded to the west to allow for more practice space. Hitting tunnels for baseball and softball could also be installed while those teams wait for their own indoor practice facility. Excited about that addition and what that can mean for the functionality of that building, which continues to get tremendous traffic from a number of our different teams, Whitman said. Slingshot case could inspire Senator Bennett. He says he's considering bills to toughen penalties. An area state senator said Wednesday he's considering new legislation to add more teeth to the penalties for certain drive-by crimes. State Senator Scott Bennett said he may introduce legislation this January that would increase the penalties for crimes, similar to the recent incidents in which a truck driver allegedly used a slingshot and ball bearings to damage other vehicles as he drove past them. Kevin Casey of Janesville, Wisconsin, faces charges of aggravated battery to a child under 13, aggravated battery in a public place, and two counts of criminal damage to property for his alleged attacks on other vehicles. Bennett, who, along with State Representative Carol Amons, spoke Wednesday at a town hall meeting at Carpenter's Local 243 Hall in Champaign, said he was inspired after talking to Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz. I don't think the current statute reflects the seriousness of the crime, Bennett said. The statute is insufficient for the trouble it is causing for motorists on the interstate. Bennett said one proposal he is considering would change the vehicular endangerment statute, something often used when people drop objects onto vehicles from an overpass. When somebody does something repeatedly, you could have a higher class of felony to penalize that, Bennett said. Among the penalties Bennett said he is considering are mandatory jail time and consecutive sentencing for multiple offenses. When somebody is driving a car and somebody breaks something, whether it be with a slingshot or something else, that person is risking not only the particular car, but all the cars on the road, Bennett said. But the senator's ideas for proposals weren't the only topics of discussion at Wednesday's town hall. Ammons talked about her role in getting a House bill passed that protects aquifers, including the Mahomet Aquifer. When we found out about the People's Gas Spill near Mahomet, that was completely unacceptable to me, Ammons said. We had meetings with People's Gas and the residents of Mahomet to look at where everything broke down when that spill took place. We passed legislation to address when notification is supposed to take place. We made sure that the Mahomet Aquifer Task Force is addressing the relevant issues to protect the aquifer from here on into the future. And Bennett addressed how the new state budget, including $350 million of additional money for K-12 education, as well as more money for the University of Illinois. Titles really didn't mean anything in these negotiations, he said. We started having rank-and-file members, both Republicans and Democrats, both in the House and in the Senate, meeting on a regular basis to get this done. We kept hearing that higher education in Illinois is in trouble. We heard from higher-achieving students from Illinois who went to Indiana, Iowa, or Alabama. Alabama doesn't have a lot of people, so when they want their rankings to go up, they find all the kids with a 28 or 30 on the ACT who can't get much financial aid at the U of I and give them a full ride at Alabama. We put money into a national merit-type scholarship program to recognize if we want to keep the best and brightest, we need to be competitive with financial aid. He's a fighter. 2-year-old trying to beat brain cancer one dance at a time. Don't underestimate the power of a musical cue. When 2-year-old Zyvian Daniels hears his favorite songs come on, he snaps to attention. It doesn't matter what he was doing before, even vomiting takes a back seat when Michael Jackson or Bruno Mars start crooning. The little boy loves to dance. With lips pursed and brow furrowed, he mimics the performer's gestures as the bright colors of a music video flash on TV. His mom, Ashley, holds him up so he can bend his knees and shake his hips to the beat. Now that his hair is gone, Xavian's round brown eyes dominate his face. He widens them to stare at his idols in awe while babbling along with the lyrics. He could watch music videos all day, Ashley said with a chuckle. But then the time comes when his energy level dips, returning him to the embrace of a thickly blanketed cot. While parts of her son's personality remain, Ashley knows that he's changed in ways that can't be denied since a cancerous tumor was removed from his brain. The call came on December 30th. Ashley's husband, Ricky, said Xavian was throwing up and becoming unresponsive. Flu season got the best of him, Ashley figured, despite her efforts to fight it. Once doctors at Carl Foundation Hospital determined something was wrong, he was airlifted to Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. An orange-sized tumor was removed from the back of his brain and later identified as a childhood atypical teratoid rhabdoid tumor, or ATRT. The aggressive cancer mainly targets young children and occurs in the brain, spinal cord, kidney, or liver. Ashley's world was then stripped down to its most basic elements, life and death. Everybody expects you to live a normal life, but nothing matters anymore, she said. This is what matters, keeping him alive. Xavian is making his way through 52 weeks of chemotherapy protocols and has tested negative for malignancy so far. Ricky takes him on day trips to Chicago, formerly every week, but now every other week for the treatments. At home, medical supplies have turned the place into something of a mini pharmacy. 2 stacks of clear plastic drawers are stocked full of everything, from thin clear tubing to cling film. Bottles of hand sanitizer accompany a tray of syringes. A box with a dark red biohazard label sits atop Xavian's play kitchen. After months of practice, Ashley is getting used to delivering Xavian's slew of at-home treatments. Her arms are stacked with a rainbow of rubber bracelets representing different cancer-related causes and patients, the gray ones for her son. "It's funny because I never used to wear these, and now I do," she said about the bracelets. Back around the time when Xavian was diagnosed, Ashley was staying at the rich Chicago Ronald McDonald House while he was in the hospital. While there one night, she was speaking with her mom when the idea of making a Xavian Facebook page came up. Ashley decided to do it, especially because she wanted a way to update loved ones without constantly repeating herself. The page Xavian's Warriors was created, putting her in touch with a network of supporters and other parents going through the same thing. "It's a therapeutic thing for me. It helps me get all of my feelings out," Ashley said about operating the page. "It's amazing how many people I've met." The Daniels family received various acts of kindness, anything from financial donations to toy gifts or foundation grants. So when Ashley heard about Alex's lemonade stand, she wanted to give back. The charity project is inspired by a girl who set up a stand to generate money for pediatric cancer research. Now kids across the country put up their own stands for the cause. Xavian's lemonade stand opened outside of the This Is It furniture store on Memorial Day weekend. Ashley said they passed their donation goal and raised $429.76. "Try taking away Xavian's blankie and you'll be in trouble. The plush tan fabric covered in white and red plaid stripes is one of his comfort objects, as his mother likes to say. Another is his bottle, which he relies on now after brain surgery diminished his motor skills. While lying down in the living room, Xavian gazes up at the brown and black speckled wall to watch TV. He wriggles around from side to side and sometimes pumps his legs up and down. Ashley said he sees a drive within him to stand up without help again and move around like everyone else. But he's gotten angrier, Ashley said. He's frustrated because he knows he can't do stuff he used to. Considering the difficulty of her situation, Ashley knows she has to take care of herself if she wants to adequately care for her son. That involves taking breaks when she's overwhelmed, as well as spending time with and confiding in her family and friends. "Don't be afraid to ask for help," she said. "Don't be too proud." There's a tendency for parents to blame themselves when their children are hurting, even if it's unproductive. "The doctors told me it was nothing anybody did," Ashley said. "Nobody could have done anything about it. It was just a bad cell that grew bad, or just a cell that grew bad." Xavian rolls up from his cot and crawls over to his mom, lifting his arms to be picked up. She perches him on her knee while he points at the TV and makes a bah sound. "Do you want to watch Beat It?" She asks. "Yes," then he gives her a kiss. The additional influx of migrants is the work of three recruiters for seed corn companies who have been charged with bringing workers to central Illinois. Wages paid by the seed corn companies vary from minimum wage to $14 an hour, depending on the job, Cuevas said. The numbers are higher because there is more work this year in the fields, he said. Cuevas said none of the workers are illegal immigrants. All are U.S. citizens and travel across the country where the work is. And an increasing number of the workers are English-speaking. He said more young people are willing to become migrant workers because they are eligible for free college education through the Migrant Council. While many of the migrants may be staying in Rantoul, they work throughout the area, from as far west as Bloomington Normal to as far east as Hoopston in Indiana. Cuevas was in Texas last week, meeting with company representatives to determine the number of migrants so cultivadoras can get ready. Cultivadoras will provide a food pantry and other services. He said food and other items are purchased from Eastern Illinois Food Bank. We make arrangements for their daycare, Cuevas said. This year I need a lot of help because I don't have a lot of funds for this. Donations of water or snacks are also needed. He estimated cultivadores will offer a food pantry 5 or 6 times during the migrant stay, compared to 2 or 3 times normally. My function is to find out the numbers because cultivadores happens to be the first stop they make to get food and childcare for those who qualify, and to tap into other services available in our county, Huevas said. Cultivadores will offer food and services not only to the Rantoul-based migrants, but those in Champaign-Urbana, too. He estimated the migrants will stay this year for about 6 months. They usually stay July to October. This year they have started early and will stay from early June to early December, he said. While field work will be long finished by the fall, Cuevas estimates half of the workers will likely stay to work in the seed company laboratories and in other jobs. A large majority will also help to clean apartments at the University of Illinois. A good bunch started cleaning apartments in May, Cuevas said. About 150 workers are doing that. A fundraiser will be held June 23rd in front of the Cultivadores Latino Center on South Maplewood Drive to benefit the food pantry and other services. Huevas, who formerly spent part of the year in Rantoul and part in Puerto Rico, said he no longer travels to Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria devastated that U.S. territory last year. The conditions in Puerto Rico remain unsafe, Huevas said. There is no water, light, or other accessories. Donations for the migrants may be mailed or brought to the Latino Center at 555 South Maplewood Drive, Rantoul, Illinois, 61866. Now we have some sports. Talking shop. Whitman, Big Ten foe for Illini Chicago date. Illinois wants to maintain a presence in Chicago. That's why the Illini will continue to look for football opportunities after fulfilling their deal for 2 more football games at Soldier Field, with this season's game against South Florida included in that number. And it's why they'll continue to play a men's basketball game each season at the United Center. Illinois will return to the United Center during the 2018-19 season. Who the Illini will play, though, might drum up more interest since they play a Big Ten opponent in Chicago, thanks to the expanded 20-game Big Ten schedule set to start with the upcoming season. Having a presence in Chicago is important, Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman said Wednesday. We've had a presence in Chicago for a lot of years. The United Center has been a big part of that tradition for a long time. Excited, I think, about what that can mean for that game. That game had become a challenge for us from a scheduling standpoint. It was difficult to get a quality opponent, especially given the return obligations. Illinois-Chicago games, which have happened for 24 straight seasons, have played out to dwindling interest the past few years. A combination of opponent, Oregon in 2014, is the only high major team in the last 5 years, and Illinois struggles have hurt at the gate. Just 5,151 fans were on hand for an 83-79 win against Illinois-Chicago in 2015. Dayton had perhaps the best crowd in a 2016 doubleheader that saw the Flyers face Northwestern before Illinois took on BYU. And last season's game was a disappointment in a 74-69 Illini loss that drew just 5,695 fans to the 20,917-seat arena. Who the Illini play in Chicago this coming season is still to be determined. The Big Ten won't release its basketball schedule until later this summer. What is known, however, are the Big Ten teams Illinois has home games with in 2018-19. Whitman was fairly certain it wouldn't be Northwestern, although the Wildcats aren't entirely eliminated from the conversation. That leaves Indiana, Minnesota, Nebraska, Ohio State, Penn State, and Wisconsin. Home and away series in 2018-19, and Michigan, Michigan State, and Rutgers home games only as options. It will be that opening segment of the Big Ten schedule in December, Whitman said, about when the game would take place, though a firm date has not been decided. The Big Ten added 2 games in early December for the 2017-18 season to handle a schedule shortened by a week to play its conference tournament in New York City. That change remains with the conference going to a 20-game slate. On the flip side of that, it will allow us to bring another non-conference game back here to State Farm Center, Whitman continued. We think it's a win-win all around. To be clear, we're not taking on existing Big Ten game away from Champaign. We're taking the new Big Ten game and moving it to Chicago. Whether Illinois continues to play a Big Ten opponent in Chicago beyond the 2018-19 season will depend on how successful this first venture is this winter. I anticipate people will like it, Whitman said. I think we'll get a nice turnout. We'll have a great traditional rival in the building, and hopefully people will come out in nice numbers. We'll give it a shot this year and see how it works, and then make some decisions about it going forward. In Bob Asmussen's column, Whitman really excited about future of Illini football program. Josh Whitman knows what an Illinois football rebuild looks like. He lived it. 21 years ago, the current athletic director started his college playing career with a 0-11 season. Sorry to remind him. It got better in his second season with the team winning three games. An 18-game losing streak ended and the team picked up two Big Ten victories. Ron Turner's regime turned the corner in year three. The Illini opened 1999 with an impressive home wins against Arkansas State and San Diego State. But the fans weren't buying in with crowds of 34,227 and 35,798 for the two games. The third game, a 41-36 thriller at Louisville, created buzz. The fourth game against top 25 Michigan State drew 52,417. It was the biggest crowd at the school in 3 years. Closer to full should be the goal for Illinois, at least. Whitman has a proven head coach, Lovie Smith, entering his third season. I'm excited about football, Whitman said. I really appreciate the heavy lifting that has gone on, both literally and figuratively, with our football student athletes, with our staff. I'm really excited about the new faces we have in the building. I think our new coaches and our new staff members will have come in and really embraced the Illinois identity and really embraced the opportunity we have here. Smith has Whitman's full support on many levels. There is a financial commitment. Smith has 4 years left on his original six-year $21 million deal. Though Smith is on some of the hot seat lists in preseason magazines and on the internet, he is as safe as any coach in the country, really. Whitman and Smith have not discussed a contract extension. No reason to. Whitman wants Smith in charge long into the future. I really believe in what we're doing and excited to see our second recruiting class take the field this fall, he said. If they are anything like the first one was, I think there's a lot to be excited about. Pointing up, Smith went 3-9 and 2-10 his first two seasons. Not the numbers Whitman or the coach had in mind. Whitman expected to see progress on the left side of the column. It doesn't mean we're going to go out and win 10 or 11 games, but to take a significant step forward in our competitiveness, to see the program start to show signs of what we think the future can look like is expected and I think will happen, Whitman said. The Illini got better in the late 1990s thanks to an upgrade in talent. Smith is trying to do the same thing. We're starting to see more and more wins on the recruiting path, which I think bodes well for our future, Whitman said. The recruiting game has changed since Whitman's playing days. It was a very private experience, he said. You would get letters, you would have phone calls, and then one day, if people were interested enough, you might get a call from Lauren Tate saying, hey, I heard you're about ready to make your college decision. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Today, these things play out in a much more public fashion. Using social media, we get to know how far down the funnel we're going to with a lot of these recruits. We see when we make a top 10. We see when we make a top 5. We see when we make a top 3. Whitman likes the quality of schools Illinois is recruiting against. It's some of the preeminent school programs in the country, he said. And us, Whitman said. That's a lot to me about the traction we're starting to gain on the recruiting side, which is, of course, really critical to our future. Work in progress. The under-construction Football Performance Center looks closer to being ready every day. It will be completed before the 2019 season. Toward the end of Whitman's playing days, Illinois added the Irwin Indoor Practice Facility. Before that, the school used the Memorial Stadium bubble with its scary revolving door. Whitman is looking for a donor to put his or her name on the new place. As you look across our athletic campus here, most of our buildings are named, Whitman said, most of them in recognition of significant gifts and very gracious generosity from different people. Whatever the name, Whitman thinks it will have a long-term impact on Illinois football. I think this building is transformative, he said. I think this building has the ability to accelerate Illinois football to the national forefront. For Whitman, it is part of the bigger picture. It advances the interest of the University of Illinois, he said. It strengthens Champaign-Urbana. It makes the state of Illinois a more exciting place to live. MLB draft, former area star. It feels good. Central grad to mull future after Brewers pick him in the 16th round. Alec Barger's ongoing rise through the ranks of organized baseball reached another high point, with this one happening on the professional level. The Milwaukee Brewers selected Barger, a 2016 Champaign Central graduate, in Wednesday's portion of the MLB draft. Barger was taken in the 16th round with 485th overall pick. It feels good, Barger said. It's something I've worked for my whole life, and it's just a dream come true. Barger recently concluded a season at Polk State College in Lakeland, Florida, which followed a single campaign at Northern Illinois. He was a News Gazette first-team All-Area choice as a Maroon senior in 2016, as well as a two-time All-Big 12 conference athlete. Barger is the most recent Central alumnus to earn a position in the MLB draft. He follows in the footsteps of Dan O'Neill, a former Maroon, and Illini, who was nabbed by Philadelphia in the 1999 draft's 27th round. We were hopeful Barker would be drafted, Central baseball coach John Stab said. We heard some things and thought it was a possibility. I'm just excited, I'm proud of him, and happy for him. Barker presently is committed to continue his college career at North Carolina State. He admitted Wednesday that he hadn't finalized a decision between going pro and staying at the amateur level. I still have some thinking to do, Barger said. As of right now, I'm leaning toward going back to school. Barger's Central tenure ended with 3 victories and a 1.10 ERA on the mound under Stab, as well as 434 batting average with home runs, 5 home runs, 30 RBIs, and 24 stolen bases. Though Barger was clearly a dual threat from the Maroons, Dobbs said he wasn't surprised his former pupil carved a collegiate path through pitching. He's one of those athletes that doesn't come around very often, Stobbs said. I always thought his ticket would be his arm. As he got older and certainly in college, it became more apparent if he was going to continue to play, it would be as a pitcher. Perhaps that wasn't immediately clear to Barger, but his time spent with Northern Illinois and Polk State College has resulted in an evolved view of a right-hander's role on the diamond. 2 pitchers with Parkland ties taken in draft. For the third time in as many years, former Parkland pitcher Brady Chanel has heard his name called during the course of the MLB first-year player draft. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, June 7, 2018. Please stay tuned for Part 2.